Okay. Hi. This is pre-show. I'm about to talk to Judy Fox. I can't wait to see what she has to say. She's a remarkable young woman who is a bold mover and shaker in a lot of ways. But I was really admiring how she was a bold shaker. Bold mover? Yeah. With her son. And I wonder what kind of wonderful being he's going to turn out to be because she's such an amazing mom. So, with that in mind, I'm going to take a time out, and we'll be right back with Judy Fox. Yay! Woohoo! Yeah. And we're back on Bold Movers and Shakers. It's Alexis Ray. I'm thrilled today to bring you the illustrious, the amazing, the fabulous, and she's still so young, Judy Fox. Welcome to the show, Judy.
Thank you for having me.
They probably have no idea why I'm so excited to meet you, which is...
Why are you so excited to meet me?
Judy's story is amazing and complex and simple all at once. She's a phenomenal marketer. I love marketing. You know, I help people with personal branding and standing out in a crowd, especially after the meeting. But you have a way of keeping in front of people, you know, in the moment. And I admire the heck out of it. And you as a mom and a businesswoman and a third business and a coach. And I'm going to stop talking and let you introduce yourself.
Well, so my background is in chemical engineering. That is my education. And then I've always been, you know, very technical and creative, both at the same time. But it felt like when you're in college, you have to pick. Yeah. And so, of course, I picked my degree and went through it. And then I got out of college and I ended up going back to school to get my master's. It was an MBA / Master of Science in Environmental Management. So then I got into the environmental field for over 18 years. So that's a very long time. But what also happened at the exact same time was I started a blog in 2008. So that blog is really what ended up driving me towards marketing and being able to turn around and coach and train about networking and sales, mainly because just doing it on the side, it was my passion. It was the thing that, you know, instead somebody is out in the garden gardening because that's what they love. I love getting online, reading articles, and figuring out how to go viral on like Pinterest or something. And then networking and being on LinkedIn has always been really fascinating to me. As like I said, as some people have a hobby of doing other things, my hobby is getting online and reading all about marketing, watching videos, and then implementing it.
Yeah, what calls to you, or what you know, is what you do, what you should do, right?
I mean, yeah,
if that's what gives you energy. Yeah, mm-hmm. As a coach, I've had people say, "Well, you know, why would you want to do that? It drains you." And I was like, "Actually, no. I love being able to help. It's invigorating." So, you know,
what's draining to one person is invigorating to another.
So. Indeed. So, at the moment, what is it you're up to?
I just launched a group coaching. I called it LinkedIn Like a Fox. And we are going to go through 4 weeks together. The first week is mostly focused on looking at your profile and how LinkedIn is set up in a way that is no longer like a resume or a CV. So we're doing it more for the entrepreneur, the author, the coach, the speaker, I have a couple people with products, consumer products, and I think it all can show up on LinkedIn, especially if you position your profile to look a little bit more like a website and move people through your highest offering or your highest return on investment. So, it's a landing page. Your LinkedIn profile is a website landing page if you optimize it that way.
So apparently... I didn't know people even read profiles. When somebody remarks on my profile, I'm like, wow, you read it. Really well written. Like, great. How do I get the 100 other people to look at it? You know?
Well, I really think the number one place, what I've noticed, the number one place people will go on LinkedIn is to your profile. It's right there with your title, and it's so easy to click on. So you can try to get them to go to your podcast. You can try to get them to go all these other places, but the number one place they'll go is over to your profile.
So do you have conversion strategies for that, from that? Do you have here's how to pay more attention to this profile over here?
I would say the conversion strategies I have is from the top down, which is, like I said, if you're an author, you want to make sure your book is front and center, where you're going to be in person with your book while you're launching it, whatever you're on. If you're going to be on the freaking Today Show, you better be somehow updating your cover image and highlighting it, very similar to highlighting a story, and I really think you can tell the story from the top down on your LinkedIn profile and just see it a little more Instagram-y, if that makes sense. Like, Instagram has your story features and you can highlight. Do you know where I'm going with this?
You're not like, a clue. Oh.
I just think we're missing keeping the above the fold. So if you have to go on your LinkedIn profile and scroll, I'm talking about the above the fold, the part that's above any amount of scrolling. So if you can just optimize that part, people will want to know more.
Oh, well, there you go.
It's always about the more.
And is this what you do full time?
Yes. Yeah. I there's still times where I reach out and say, hey, I'm available for different environmental projects. I've done it for 18 years. It's still in my blood. It's not something I'm ever probably going to get deleted from my system, but I mostly just work with clients on their online social media strategy and doing coaching and consulting.
Wow. So how did you make the leap from being, how'd you make the leap?
I think it mostly started with getting a couple retainer clients, one-on-one retainer clients that were meeting with me for like once a week, right, or sometimes even just once a month. As long as I had a couple of those that were signed that we were going to do a 6-month contract, I felt really comfortable to say, okay, I can close 2 or 3 more of these and I'll be fine. So I think people underestimate how much I feel like the way I hear people talking is, you've got to get your course, you've got to get a book, you've got to do this, you've got to do this, you've got to do this. And there's a lot of pressure to do all that.
Yes.
And honestly, I think the reason my group coaching went so well the very first time I'm launching it, and I got tons of butts in the seats, was because I've done one-on-one. And somebody even mentioned to me, you should do one-on-one for at least sometimes maybe even 20 to 50 people before you can turn around and say you have a process that's repeatable to help people. And since I've been doing one-on-one since 2008,
wow.
And it's been a side hustle, wow. But all the skills that I have for running an environmental consulting business and having my own, like I think you mentioned, this is my third time being an entrepreneur. So I've got a lot of experience with standard operating procedures, setting up how to onboard, how to write a proposal. And every single time I keep telling myself, dial it down, make it more simple. The more simple you can make it for somebody to say yes, the more likely you're going to get a yes. And it's just through doing it over and over and getting the no's. I get tons of no's. But all you need is 5 yeses out of 100 no's.
Who are you? Well, it's true. You know, yeah. I'm going to go there and say, you know, even strippers get more no's than yeses. It's true. And they're naked. Hello. I mean, what are we expecting out of life? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Somebody told me that once.
Nice.
Moving right along. So when you're actually, because it's bold for a person to just name it, claim it, and then the make it so part. I mean, that's just, do you have a little advice for someone who might be like, I think I got something. Everybody says I'm good at it, but I don't know what to do with it.
And my advice is, like I said, be willing to start with, again, I've had to ignore a lot of advice. And one of the pieces of advice I feel like I have to ignore is you're pricing yourself too low. And I said, well, it's an iteration. So the first time I remember launching and saying, you know, my price was a lot lower that per hour. And then I've got all the other people saying, you have to figure out how to not be per hour. And I said, it's okay. I'm going to reach a point where I am not per hour, or that my hourly rate incorporates the taxes I need to pay, the insurance I need to pay, like all the things. But because being able to side hustle or having times and opportunities where I was able to build that part of my business, it just, you know, I feel like it's just years. Like I was just listening to somebody's YouTube journey on, well, I was on YouTube, and it took them 10 years to finally hit a moment where one video went to 1 million. And wow, it took them 10 years, thousands and thousands and thousands of videos,
wow,
to finally get to one that just popped. And that's when a light bulb went off. But it was all the things that added up to getting to that moment that you can't delete from all those hours of doing the ones that were crappy.
So what you said was real important there, Judy, about how, I mean, I've heard the advice to those who price themselves low actually do better when they raise their price a lot because there's a perceived value. But do you have a name? The people that are, you know, want to work with you, they know that you have this record of, I mean, record breaking video views, and you know, it's pretty freaking remarkable, really. In fact, if for the listeners who don't know why I'm gushing, would you please tell them what I'm referring to?
Yeah. So it reminds me of that YouTube person's journey where I've been online since 2008, and up to 2018, I think at that point I had maybe amassed about 200,000. So between 10 years, 200,000 views. But when I got really active on video in 2018, in 1 year, I hit 3 million views.
Wow.
But yeah, that's why I remind myself and really related to that story of the person who did YouTube, because I've been side hustling since 2008. And it's almost like I was able to figure out over time my own formula, or seeing it repeated. I listened to a podcast recently where a woman was talking about how going viral is actually not, it's more of a formula. I mean, it's not easy. You have to actually implement and provide crap tons of value, but you can do it. My highest performing post is 500,000 views and thousands of comments and likes.
Wow.
But it was because it was the highest value thing I had probably created. And I remember when I was creating it, I was like, this is high value. Like this will get shared. It just will. I just know it. I didn't know it would get shared that much to 500,000 people, but.
Wow. So yeah. It was the giveaway of content. Mm-hmm. Does that then turn around? Does it convert?
I would say I closed easily thousands of dollars the next day.
Wow.
Because people immediately saw, if you know how to do that, well, there's people out there speaking this all the time, but you're honestly just selling people their time back. So if they know you know how to do it, and if you can create something like that and how show people how your brain works, there's going to be tons of people who implement it themselves. I've already had people send me and say, hey, Judy, thank you for that post. I implemented your advice and I did it myself. But all you need is even 100 people reaching out saying, hey, I need you to do what you just did and I don't have the time to do it. And I'm I'm doing great in my business.
Yeah.
And if you can help me in my business, this is what I need because I was able to see you do it. If you can never show your work, then people can copy you all the time and you can't really help it, as long as it's not like a full on, like they literally took my article and said that they wrote it, but that's obviously copyright infringement. But
yeah,
people can take your work online and I can see how you're running, you know, your show, and I can be inspired by it and look at it and say, ooh, I really like what she did there. But as long as you're building off of somebody else, but I could also reach out to you and say, hey, can I hire you to help me figure out how to make my podcast have more sparkle, you know, that kind of thing. Like, right. So people won't know what you know unless you put it out into the world like you're doing. And I can look at it and be able to say, oh, she can help me because she's literally doing it. And I can see it being done.
How does that makes perfect sense of, how does a person who is, does more of an inner journey, perhaps is more of a, less of a tangible, external measurable product, like your coaches, for instance, how do they make their mark when you can't say, look, here's the before and here's the after, you know, what do they do?
I think the before and after is in the storytelling, especially with their clients and having, you know, I'm thinking of one person in particular who inspires me online to, even with my, what I work on, a lot of the before and after still does, it can be visual and it can be numbers, but it really can come down to, you shifted my mind with how I think about posting online or value or what is other focused. And I didn't realize that people don't know what those terms mean when implementing information. So when it comes to coaching,
I don't either. What does that mean?
Oh my gosh, I love it. So, okay. But when it comes to coaching, if you can get people to start, you've got trigger questions along the way during your coaching that you can document during the process, what their feedback is, what they're thinking, how they feel about working with you, what the user experience is. Yeah. So that way that will drive, and you can share that with your community in a way that drives more clients and people to you. It turns into like that kind of referral recommendation type of cycle. Okay. What is other focused?
Yeah.
Making, even though you're sharing a personal story, maybe, so yeah. Maybe you get online and you want to share your personal story, finding a way for it to sound like it could be written by anyone. Oh. It's almost like so personal, but yet, and the way I tell people to start by doing it is reduce the number of I's they use. Like, I woke up and I did this and I did that and I. That, especially on LinkedIn, will reduce your reach, because there are posts, I'm not going to say it's all or nothing, but I will say most of the time, based on my research, the use of the letter I will reduce the number of times people will click that share button or will relate to your post. It starts to just make it look like you just want to talk about yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a bold move to be brave enough to bare your soul, but you want to do it the right way, people.
You know? Well, I almost feel like, again, you can maybe bare your soul. It's a series. So the opener is, so let's come up with a story. Like, my experiences of what I've learned by launching a business for the third time. So that way, instead of my title being about me launching a business, my title, and again, I might think in like YouTube thumbnail titles, there's so much value in actually hopping from platform to platform and bringing stuff back over to LinkedIn or to Instagram or all these different places, because thumbnails make you think in these quippy, short, how to get attention phrases, which you still need for LinkedIn to get people to see the value so up front and center for why they would then watch the rest of your video, read the rest of your post. So if you do, yeah, value first, I would then say something like, the top 5 tips I have that I've learned from launching a business for the third time, or something like that.
That's very helpful. Maybe you can, I'm going to try and segue. I just added myself. I'm segue into,
let's do it. I went on a run there.
No, you're good. I appreciate all the answers. I really do. And I know that the audience will too. You have a reputation for being, you know, successful at what you do. Effective, to me, is what success means. You're effective. Yeah. And that you share as much as you do so openly is awesome. And who you are as a person is an adventurer inside. And I love that part about you.
Yes.
Yeah. That's what really, I heard you on somebody's show, and it's amazing the power of podcasting, how we get exposure now to amazing people. And it was your conversation about, it was a while ago. I don't always want to talk about the past, but if you don't mind,
No, let's do it.
I would love to. So I won't even introduce your story. It's yours. But you were an adventurous soul, and take it away. I'm going to go.
Oh my gosh. My adventurous soul goes back forever, but I'll just start with, I actually created a bucket list when I was 18. And I had heard about this concept of 100 things you want to do before you die. And I just wrote it down in my journal, and I created this, like, looking back, it looks like the stupidest list, but it honestly was amazing. And it said things like go on a hot air balloon ride, hike the Appalachian Trail, go climb a mountain, go camping. I'd never been camping. I wanted to just go on all these adventures, run a half marathon, run a marathon. I made a list of 100 random things, and I had no idea what they actually implied, because I'd never done anything close to camping at that point in my life. Right. And then it's hilarious now that I have, so for the Appalachian Trail part, I've actually spent 2 weeks on the trail by myself with my dog, and we hiked from Virginia into Pennsylvania, just me and her, for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And then I ended up working one summer volunteering at the Appalachian Trail Center headquarters in Harper's Ferry. So I wouldn't have predicted 10 years before that by just saying I wanted to go for a hike on the Appalachian Trail would turn me into the person. I was the one that summer taking pictures of the through hikers and putting them in the catalog and documenting and giving advice for the shelters along the way and where they want to stay. And
oh, cool. And
it was totally crazy, but it worked out amazing. It was so much fun.
Oh, cool.
And I had never been to Europe at that point when I was 18, but then since then I've lived in Germany, and I lived in London and went to school over there, and just all these different things. Like that list, at one point, I think I was 25 years old. So I made that first list at 18, and I had to make a different list at 25.
Because you were done?
I was almost done.
Holy crap, woman. Oh my God. What?
I'm like check, check. I was like, marathon, check.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty intense. So, and then, of course, I've done a lot of things since then. I'm in my 40s. A lot of people don't realize I'm in my 40s.
Ew.
But yes, I did a lot of things.
You look 20.
30, yeah.
Wow. Good living or something.
So basically, my son was born when I was 35. And he got his passport when he was 2 months old. So he has been California and Texas and Germany and Czech Republic and a million places. Like, he's traveled all over Europe, France, wherever, Switzerland, Italy, who knows? He's been everywhere.
I've been everywhere, man. And still toddler.
At 6 months old, he did his first international flight. Me and him, I remember I've done, I think, 8 flights with him, literally just me and him. Like, I mean, there's one that I maybe, there's a couple that I did with other people that I knew, but almost all the time it was just me and him. So
that is so cool. And so inspiring. There's so much a person changes, and you know it when you get to travel, especially over anywhere out of here, and you get to come back and go, gee, this place it's like a fetus or something. These other places are ancient, and there's so much history, and there's so much to learn and feel. You know, the sidewalks talk. You know, the environment, the air smells different. All of it changes you.
Well, and I was going to say, even the difference of traveling before having a kid and then after also really opens your eyes to just cultural ways of the way we think things have to be done. Yes. And they don't have to be done that way. And I think that's what also continues to push my boundaries for saying, nope, my business doesn't have to be run the way you run your business. I don't have to show up the way you show up. I love these things, and I want to implement it this way, and I'll try it. And I think the reason I'm a little more bold in that way is because I just see parents raising children so many different ways. And I don't mean to go to the kid thing, but that truly really, really helped me see And I don't know if I would have seen it unless I was raising a child in a foreign country. And that made me realize the way they feed their children, the way they perceive and the way you are raised, you start to think that's the only way things are done because you're in your little family unit.
Yes.
And I feel like I had that, good or bad. My parents are awesome, but I can only see so much by being raised within my family unit. And you have to see how other families function. You have to spend a little bit of time in them to see that your family may be quiet and another family's like yelling all over the house. And that is not good or bad. It's just different. And it's so cool to see that.
And it's definitely a personality changer because of the perspective that you now have. Mm-hmm. And that's so fantastic for your son. I know he was little when you started, but just the fact that you did that and boldly did that. I mean, you just up and went and stayed, you know. I did that too. I bought a one-way ticket to Alaska and I had no idea what would happen when the plane landed. But it worked out. It always works out, but I didn't have a child with me either. You know, it's often.
I don't know what's going to happen when the plane lands with the child. I mean, not too much, but a little.
Right.
Yeah.
So, it's a bold move to do that. And that's based in something. For me, it was because I had my culinary knives and my chef's knives in my backpack. I knew I could land and always find a job. So when you decided to up and go, was there a behind the, I know I've got this no matter what happens kind of plan or thinking?
I mean, there's always been kind of a plan and thinking. Like I said, even when I up and decided,
you walked around brainless, but you know what I mean? Like, here's my backup plan. Like, I have chef's knives. I got this. No worries.
I think you're right. I always felt like I've got this, no worries. Literally, if I land in, you know, this foreign country and it's not working, what's the worst that's going to happen? It's what is the worst thing that's going to happen? I'm going to literally get on the plane and go back to my parents' house or something. I'm going to do something. And that actually is what happened. At one point, I literally got on the plane and went back and moved in with my parents. So it's funny. And at one point, like I said, it was 38 years old and I was living at my parents' house. So it's one of those, is that really the worst thing that's going to happen? I mean, and it wasn't that long that I lived there, but it did happen.
And you lived.
You know, not everyone is as, there's some things that we take for granted. We may look at other people and say, oh, they had this luck and they had this luck. And just have to keep your eyes on your lane. I've had my lucky moments and my, my advantages, whatever I have as far as, but I'm also like, my brain and what I do behind the scenes, I work damn hard. Like, I've researched. Wow. So for hours, I've researched and networked and found out some of the top ways to run a group coaching. So that way I can try to create the best group coaching experience. I have I'm always like, how do I get better? And then that's the biggest thing. How do you just constantly improve and get better? That's it, right?
Yeah. Continuous improvement. It's a standard of practice in Australia. I lived there for a few years and they really do put themselves through it every year. I mean, there's no stopping on the certifications and the continuous improvement. You know, it's not, we've always done it this way and by golly, we're always going to, you know, being able to adopt a new way. One of the things that you said earlier was that you hear a lot of advice, but you don't necessarily take it in. Mm-hmm. In my work, I like to help people become their own guru. It's like, woo, you really do know this, but there's a lot of noise. And maybe you don't know, and I don't know is the beginning of new possibilities. Like, all that happy stuff is right there. But at the same time, how does a person tune in? How do you know that something is, hey, that makes sense, or whatever? How do you discern?
Everyone probably processes it differently. So I can only talk about how I do, but I notice you already know this about me. And I think every single person knows this about me. I'm a verbal processor. So I will leave voice messages and talk to people. I have no issue running a podcast, being on podcast. I just, yes. If I could spend all day talking, I probably would. And
that'd be great.
Yeah, I know.
I get it.
But at the same time, I've learned that my center for dealing with what's going to work with me and what's not going to work with me is located in my throat. So if it starts to choke off my words, and that sounds like a funny phrase, but I don't know where it is. And I actually went to a session last night with this woman named Ellie. She's trained with Martha Beck and had that kind of compass type of inner work feeling training. And I've actually done that before, and I've read Martha Beck's work. And at the end of the day, I think when we try to combine the head and what we're hearing and the logical with my gut and the way I work, it's when words get caught in my throat is I know that I can't do that thing. What if I, for example, have a hard time with all the people preaching, build your email list, build, that's all great. Build your email list. I think that's great, but don't spam them. Like, I don't want tons of inbound emails that have nothing really to do with me. And I think it's really hard. I think it's hard to create emails that constantly on a regular basis have to do and provide value to everyone on your list.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a tall order.
Yeah.
And I don't know that many people doing it, to be honest, that are able to really provide that high level of value and do it week after week or day after day. There's some people that try that start to put me on their email list, and I'm like, okay, I don't want to see your emails every day. I've got other stuff going on.
Yeah.
So I realized that when I start to feel a certain way in my throat, I say to myself, I can't follow through on that. If I can't talk about it and be honest, it like literally gets caught in my throat. Even just thinking about that is actually making my throat tight right now.
Wow.
So my throat is my indicator. If I'm able to just like talk about it and be like out and just verbal, and I can process tough stuff and tough conversations, but it still has to be honest and only honest. It's like I have an honest filter right there. Like awesome. A no crap. And once crap, like I just can't. And then if I sense that I'm saying something that I'm like, oh, I hate that. Like, or something that somebody advice they gave me. And if I try to repeat it back and tell myself to do it and it catches, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to implement that.
Wow. That's a heck of a filter. Wow.
I know. It's pretty nice. I'm just kidding.
That's outstanding, really. If you can just,
but it took all those times to sit with, the work that I've done, the coaching that I've been through with different coaches. So it didn't just happen overnight.
Gotcha. Yeah. And, you know, to that own self be true. And it can take a while to know what that means. Mm-hmm. I have a pithy one-liner, which is basically when in doubt, wait it out. Wait for the big yes.
Yeah. And I've learned that really, really strongly is that not every decision has to be made right this second. And so many people are like, we have to decide or this or that. And this woman, Shannon, who I am interacting with here in Richmond, Virginia, she runs the RebelCon community here. She mentioned how she just had a gut feeling there was something she needed to wait on and leave space in her schedule or in the conference schedule. And there was nothing telling her that she had to do it, but she felt it. And she followed that gut instinct. And then she ended up finding a speaker that fit that exact spot that she gut knew needed to be filled.
Yes.
And up to that point, the logical part would be close this conference, announce the speakers, pitch it, get it out into the world. But her entire community and everyone around her, I even get goosebumps because this is how I feel. People will trust your gut. And if you don't have it all figured out, and we act like we have to have it all figured out. And that's why I love launching this group coaching and telling people, the things I have figured out, I'm going to get you results and I'm going to help you, but there's things I don't have figured out. So I'm okay admitting that and not acting like I'm running this group coaching from a sense of I have group coaching figured out. I'm going to challenge myself to learn from each of you and enjoy, you actually, people in a group feel like they're providing value back. And that's helpful for both people.
Sure it is. Yeah.
We want to wake up every day feeling like there's people ahead that we can learn from, people equal that we can connect to and be great friends and love and enjoy. And then there's people behind us that we can help.
I like that. It's great perspective.
Yeah. It's a great day. Do that every day.
That's awesome. It takes the pressure off too. You know, I don't know, is the beginning of new possibilities, but not having clarity or focus can be really difficult. So sometimes, you know, just making a decision, but maybe you can make a decision not to make a decision.
I make that all the time. I love that decision.
Yeah. Given your personality and all that who you are, intellect, wit, scope of exposure, when I pose this question, it can be a little bit of a what? So given all that you've done already for you right now, what is bold and what would be bold for you next? How do you define being bold, first of all?
I define being bold as really just owning and stepping fully into who you are. I think we take for granted just how unique each of us literally individually is. And so you're bold when you own it. Okay. And then what is next, or what is bold next? Or
Before you jump into let me ask you something about that. We can't not be ourselves. We can be ourselves like not knowing who we are, but that's still you. You can't not be mm-hmm. you. So when I hear what you just said, I just have to ask, why is it that it's bold to be all of yourself?
I think it's because we've been raised to ask for permission all the time. So I even notice it with raising my kid that he's driven to ask for permission to go to the bathroom, permission to get ready for bed, or I want to wear this outfit to school. There's certain checkpoints that I notice that he is not only being taught by me, but being taught by the school system, good or bad, I'm not complaining, but to ask for permission. And that's built into our corporate environments too.
Wow.
And that was a huge part of why I hit a kind of a wall with some of the companies I was working with, was because permission-based or fear-based leadership, I just couldn't take it anymore. It's coming from the wrong place. So that's what I mean. I think there's maybe my brain comes from 20 years or 18 plus years of corporate experience and saying it is bold just to be yourself and not ask for permission to be yourself anymore.
Wow.
So that's where it comes from.
Wow. And underneath all of that is somebody wondering who the heck they've become, or, you know, what parts of them do they want to keep and what parts do they want to let go of?
Well, and I was told that to make it and to get into the C-suite and to do all that stuff and to climb the ladder, I would have to figure out how to be different than who I am. And they explained it. And this was a business coach back in maybe 2005. And they basically sat me down and said, look, it's just like you're an actor or an actress. You just go to work, you put on your actor or actress role that you're going to wake up every day. And it's just like you put on a wig, you put on your clothes, you do all the things, you go to work, and you can come home and be yourself.
Mortified.
And I remember being like, yeah, that's not going to work. I don't know how to do that. I said, I'm not that great of an actor or an actress. I mean, I bless them. Like, I love showing up on camera and being on screen, but maybe I can kind of learn more about acting. But that's a whole profession.
Acting is the art of being real. Otherwise, you're acting. I've taken those classes. It's better than therapy, by the way. It's great.
It's what?
It's a great opportunity. It's better than therapy. I mean, acting classes are intense.
I would love to take improv. I think
that improv is the bomb. You know why? And you'll love it. You'll excel big time. And improv is based on yes. Mm-hmm. And. So yeah, I mean, if I said I've got three heads and a piggy nose, you'd be like, Okay.
Yes, and I have four heads. And
yes, and then yeah, we're whatever the scene is, it dies when somebody says no, and that's so representative of life. The person that says no wins, or whatever, the thing ends because of that.
Well, and we were talking before about interviewing skills, and that goes really well with improv. If you can do interview skills with yes and, because you want to, number one, feel like as you interview, you've heard them, and that people following along to the interview can feel like, oh, this made sense. And now we've logically went to the next thought process. But I do notice the Q&As that are so defined, they don't flow as well. And it makes people, and I've listened to those and I've realized, oh, I know what's missing. It feels like that person just dropped something. They just said something. And then the interviewer all of a sudden is like, it's almost like a no. Like I didn't really hear you. And now I'm asking the next question because you just dropped it. It's like a line.
Yeah. It's a tricky balance of one person's agenda versus the other person's information, and how do you get both of them done? And it needs to flow. It needs to be yes and yes. And then let me
just and
it's sometimes guests go over there and I'm like, come on back. You know?
I think I did that one time.
Not at all. I love where you go. See, tangents open doors that I didn't know existed, and pretty good. Not bad for a white girl with a cooking degree, huh? Just saying.
So what's our next meal? What are we going to eat? What is your favorite thing to cook?
What do you like?
Do you like making meals or like desserts or?
I'm really good at sauces.
I like that.
And appetizers, little hors d'oeuvres. To me, life is a poo-poo platter.
And I think you can have a whole dinner of appetizers.
Yeah.
Or a whole lunch or whatever. Yeah. I love the whole, what is that? Where you get those. Yes. I love that. Those places.
It's all about it. Yeah. A little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Nice.
Yep. Variety is the spice of life. So anyway, going back to boldness, what would be bold for you? Like you rewrote your bucket list. Is there something on there that's like, and it's a reach, or often the word bold is defined as something that's kind of out of reach for us, but we go anyway, jump over the precipice. I don't know.
It's right on that edge of possible and impossible, feeling like something's almost impossible for us to do, but going for it anyways. I don't know. What is bold? I think even just sharing more of my personal behind the scenes would be really, really bold for me, because I've noticed, like even last night, I went to this event and I opened up a little bit more to more people in a room about something personal that was going on in my life. And I did it because I saw somebody else open up and I really related to what she said. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to just quickly just say this, but it ended up creating more connections than the connections that I want. Like the thing that I need is the thing that I need to say that I need. And that sounds funny that it's bold, but
no,
we're not really good at always asking for help or asking for what we need. And I almost, this is going to get emotional, but I almost feel like I got hurt. And whenever people get hurt, there's that saying, hurt people, hurt people. I don't think I'm running around hurting people. At least I hope not. But I have certain things that have hurt me that make me say, well, if I call out to the universe, if I make a list of goals, I like to make lists of goals that involve me, that I know I can achieve. But when I start to create lists and goals that say, for example, I want to hire somebody, that's somebody I can't control. That's a thing that I don't, it's one of those things that starts to feel outside of my, it feels very bold for me to trust that I'm going to find the right person, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, it's almost like I can trust myself, but it's when you start to put trust in other people that you start to remind yourself of those things that you got hurt, and you, we're all in a healing process. I mean, who hasn't been hurt? We've gotten through loss. There's not a matter of if it's going to happen, it's when it's going to happen. You're going to experience gut-wrenching pain at some point in your life. I don't know when, and I'm sorry to tell people this, but it's going to happen. You're going to lose somebody. No, I mean, even just thinking about my dog, she's 13. And when I was looking around, because she's normally at my feet, but I mean, that's going to be gut-wrenching, you know, when she's not here anymore. So things like that. Like, now I'm a downer.
Not at all. What you've done is you've struck a chord of the lack of confidence we have, so many of us have, of trusting ourselves just because we did something in the past and it didn't work out. Mm-hmm. Whenever I've looked back at that, Judy, the thing that I notice, and I'll totally own anything, everything, every time, bring it, show me what I did. If I'm really honest, it was that moment where I went against my voice. Mm-hmm. That still small voice is still a small voice, you know? And I've nailed myself last night. I was like, this is why I did this. I overrode, and did I get taken advantage of by this narcissist. Oh my God. If I had just, and I figured out where the fallouts were. Mm-hmm. Now I'm no, now I could teach.
Oh, almost every moment along the way, I've had a voice, and I've been able to say, and I had one very clear, like a big decision, huge decision. Yes. And I ended up having this moment, this like literal, like voice, like I could hear it. And it was like, don't do this. And then I went ahead and did it. I did it because, and that's when you go back to, there are so many driving factors, and that's where you can try to decrease the noise and how many people's voices you let in, because the more voices you let in, the harder it is to hear that one that's like,
yes,
I can read, we can all read micro expressions. We can all read through crap, but we get caught up in those cycles of they're using all these tactics, or they're doing all these right things, and they're playing on something that, I mean, we all want to be loved. We all want to be seen. We all want to be heard. And certain people know how to get those triggers, and we get the micro expressions and we see that something's not quite right, but they're hitting these other things and these other parts of us. So
I'm not familiar with the term micro expressions.
Oh yeah. That goes back to my reading a book about, it was like an FBI agent who wrote this really great book about how to tell if somebody's lying, or how to basically not necessarily profile people, but how to create red flags on people that allows you to pause the conversation, or to pause the contract, or to pause the relationship and say, hey, just to dig and ask more questions. Because honestly, at the end of the day, it wasn't about anyone at the FBI can literally just look at you and be like, oh, you're lying. It's always being able to tell the difference between when they're not lying and when they are, when they're evading, when they're positioning, when they're doing something that, so you've got to spend enough time with people, or the micro expressions are micro movements, closed offness. I mean, there's all those like typical things that people do. But when you put it all holistically together, that's where your brain clicks things that you, like dogs see it. Dogs will growl at somebody and respond because they see those things. Mm-hmm. But us, we get caught up in social, how we have to look socially and being kind or whatever. We get caught up in all these other things. And that's why I'm probably a little stronger on the block or delete button, because if I get a micro moment gut feeling, I trust it. I just have to, because there's how many billions of people on this planet. And if you're going to do something sketchy or weird or funky, I mean, it's got to be at that level, but still, if you're going to do something, it's just not right. We're not a good fit. We're never going to work together. Probably. Like, why would we work together if somebody shows up and does something really off-putting? So,
and it can be the subtle things too. And that's where, you know, the major lesson has come in lately with this narcissist, and I didn't know it was, and it was, it's just smallest things where someone says that they'll call you or they'll come and get something and they don't do it. Oh, hey, could you cover that for me? And because, you know, like, sure, I'll help you. Of course I will. You know, and it's not even being like, you know, a butt kisser or a people pleaser. It's just, of course I'll help you because that's who I am. Yeah. But now looking back, it's like, oh, hang on. All those things add up now to the kind of person, the result that I've had with this person. And should have listened to the gut that said, don't do that part. Don't do that. And I overrode it because I wanted to be accepted. I don't know. I didn't want to be like, I don't know. It happens. It happens.
Yeah. And then and sometimes we want the project. Sometimes we want the income. Sometimes we want title, the position. There's always something that's going to override it. And sometimes that overriding, if you calculate it out, it's not a bad thing. It's really not. It can work out in your favor, but you got to be aware you're doing it.
Yeah.
That you're overriding something and saying, I'm willing to take the risk on this person. And then try not to kick yourself when it turns out the way you thought it was.
Well, or you didn't see it coming.
So, yeah, that's the other thing. Being blindsided is honestly probably the worst. It's easier, I think, when you're not blindsided in some ways. Like, oh, okay, that's cool. I kind of saw you like that. And yeah. None of us are perfect. So I'm not coming from a place, there's people who are not perfect.
Yeah.
And they do things like they forget something or they miss a meeting or they say, oh my gosh, I'd love to jump on a call. And they really mean it, but their schedule is packed for the next 2 or 3 months. So I feel like there's a difference between people who are imperfect, showing up, and yeah. Keep going. Yeah. And then there's people who are gaming the system and they're not acting like they're imperfect. They're not acknowledging the things and their blind spots. At least there's some people trying to say, oh, I have a blind spot in that area. That's an area that I need to work on. And if that person can own it, I'm like, okay, you're cool.
Yeah.
Because I mean, Think about it. Think about all the people who are dealing with health issues. We have no idea about somebody who has chronic pain. We have no idea they're dealing with chronic pain because they're private. Yep. But the way they show up in the world could cause us red flags. But there's certain things you got to pay attention to. Do they honor that gap or whatever it is? So,
yeah. And is there a manual? Because I'm starting one.
I wish. I love that FBI book. Because honestly, that book really made me clear on, like I said, there's the people who, when you ask curious questions, that's the tell. When you start to, if that person does have a chronic pain, a chronic illness, something, and they don't want to really talk about it or they're private, but there's something they did, they didn't get back on a project, they didn't meet a deadline, to start with curiosity and how they respond is the tell. Because people who respond with, I'm just going through something, I don't really feel comfortable talking about it, you're probably okay. But then the people who get super, super defensive or something, and they, you know what I mean? There's like anger there. And then you're like, okay, let's dig a little more. So
yeah. Dig yourself away from it.
Yeah. Anger's never a good path to start heading down. And if you can pull somebody back from anger, that's great. But yeah, that's where you start getting into trolling and people who are just, they're just fired up and angry. So
there's a lot of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you should have your expression. I do. It has to get out somehow. I had this fantasy of the ARC, the Anger Release Center, in which you could go, you could walk into a building and you could smash china plates on a brick wall and you could really, you know, whatever. There's all kinds of expressions to
take
be able
to back to something. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The insurance would be a nightmare, but,
That's true. You gotta wear safety glasses.
Definitely. And some kind of suit or something. Or you can do what I did. You know, I was pissed off for 5 years and carried 9-inch nails, pretty hate machine with me everywhere. And would throw down wherever they'd let me throw down my CD. It didn't matter. Seattle was like that. 3 o'clock and the DJ will throw my CD down. Sure. And I'm on an airbox again. Sure. No worries. Nice. Yeah. And it gets it out of your body. You know, at least then you're not taking it out on the dog.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I don't. yeah, don't take it out on other humans or animals or dogs or whatever. But yeah, yeah, go for a run, go out beatboxing or whatever you said. Oh, air boxing.
Yes. Yeah. Running, enthusiastic running man.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my rave move. That's my move. That's all I got.
Well, and I understand. I understand why people, you know, we weren't meant to be this sedentary, like locked up in our cubicle kind of lives. And we go from a box of a car, box to the cubicle, box to this, and then we go to a box store. We live our lives in boxes. So we want to break out of it because we weren't really meant to be in boxes like that. At least I don't think we were. I don't think we were like programmed. We were programmed to like what? Hunter and gatherers. I don't know. All the history of life is in our DNA.
And you touched on something that may be like a really baseline issue that's going on where people are just like, and I don't even know why, you know? Mm-hmm. So
I have that song in my head, like, I want to break free. I don't know. It's like, yeah. People just want to be free to be themselves. And that goes back to be bold, be yourself. And it sounds so simple, but it's not. I really don't think it is.
Well, one of the things that that you said was really important to me is that you showed up and you know, the more you reveal, oh, here's this part. Okay, mm-hmm. You guys good with that? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is that you get surprised with the response. It can be amazing. Having just, you know, I wore like a raver outfit to do my very first paid public talk. And they liked the talk, but they loved the outfit even more. And they were like, you gave us permission at this age. And I was like, what do you mean? Wait, at this age. I was 36, you know, I was like, hang on, it's not okay. I mean, don't you dress like this? And they're like, no, but you opened the dance floor. You made it possible for us to do that by just doing it and carrying it off. And I'm like, oh, okay, I didn't mean to. But that's what can happen, is you can start a ripple effect of a personality or self-expression and make it okay. And that's
I was going to say the first LinkedIn local event that I ran here in Richmond, I had a dance break in between the keynote and a panel discussion. And I was like, everyone doesn't have a dance break? Like, who doesn't want to have a dance break? Stretch, get up, party it out a little. So.
Dance break, that's awesome. So to kind of wrap this up as far as
but I never want it to end.
I don't want it to end either. I absolutely adore you. I'm gonna keep you
we're
on.
We're gonna live stream. We'll live stream. We'll start like a Twitch channel live streaming. Work with you know, work with us on a daily basis. We'll just be live.
Absolutely. I would love it. You know, we're live right now. Call you, give us a call.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You got a problem, we'll solve it. You need a connection, we got it.
Oh my gosh. Well, I was going to say the DJ Revolve it.
I love it. Twisted Sister, DJ Revolve it right there. Mm-hmm.
Ice, baby.
Oh, that just, I got another story on that one. I was being bold and you may not have seen this little video. There's a raw video that I did. Anyway, the backside of it is a bunch of pictures of amazing things that have happened just to mm-hmm. show the before and after, you know. One of those was I Love the 90s tour, and I was in my red leather pants, and I was fireballed up, and I ended up at the back of the building for the concert. Didn't know that, just saw the band, and I just kept sauntering, you know, just, and I could see them all walk in the door, and I didn't stop walking. I was just following that thing, right? And mm-hmm. this guy comes out, and he walks up to me, and I'm looking at his jeans, and I was like, wow, those are cool jeans. Hey, man, look at those braids. I like your braids, too. That's neat. Hey, what's your name? He said, Coolio. I was like, are you kidding me? You're why I'm here. Wait. And I pulled off my coat, and I gave my phone to the security guard. Get my picture. And he looks a little stunned. He's probably starstruck.
You know? Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But then, you know, it was just about being bold, and I didn't expect him to walk out. Mm-hmm. And then walking away, and I hear music from a van, and it's kind of a camper van. And the door slides open. They're like, hey, Miss Lady, you get up in here. And it was Vanilla Ice. And you know, it was just like, party on, let's do it.
Hang out.
You know, the randomness of life is and I guess that's bold to some people.
But to yeah.
To hey, I don't know what's around that corner, but it might actually be great.
That's actually when I've sometimes met my best friends, my done the most adventurous, fun things because I literally said to the universe, I don't know what's about to happen today, but I'm going to leave my house. And then I'm going to do whatever you tell me to do next. And I'm going to then go next. And it sounds funny, but I'll do that with my son. And he calls those days that we went on a road trip, but we never really went anywhere. And I didn't know that he registered that in his head as a road trip, but we did that.
Aww.
Back in December. We did one of those days. And he was like, that was one of my favorite days of my life. And I was like, what? We just went with whatever was on our minds next, whatever called us to go where we needed to go, not agenda driven, not we got to go shop and now we have to go to Target, we have to go here. It was like, where do we want to go? Like, where do you want to end up? Do you feel it? And he thought that was the best day of his life. So now we have those days and he says, Mom, can we go on a road trip? And I know what he means. So it's fun. Those days are fun. People should do them more. Like, get in the car and be like, I don't know where we're going. We're going somewhere.
Yep. And you always make it, you know, you always make it. Every single day is an adventure. And even going to the same grocery store for 20 years, you're still, you don't know what's ahead. It's still an adventure of unknowns. But I like to encourage people to ask, how can I have more fun today than I ever thought possible? And then forget about it. And it'll show up, or what would be the most fun next, and wait for that answer or follow that impulse. Because when, you know, that state of joy, it really does open doors. And it's like this divine guidance system can finally show up because I have no sense of direction at all. Give me a map, I'll go the wrong way every time. It's horrible, horrible. Backwards, I don't have it. So, you know, you have to trust the inner GPS. It's not always plugged in though. It's like, where am I? You're right here. Where you are is where you're at, you know.
Yes.
You know, and bringing your son along to just say, "Well, what would be fun now?" And that it works out. That is tremendous training for the adventurous outlook of life. You don't even know what you're doing. You're just doing such a great job.
Well, and honestly, it all got started because I was like, "Oh, I have to go Christmas shopping, but I don't know what I want to get everybody. So we're just going to go out on an adventure, like." We'll randomly go wherever we're decided to go. And then it turned into this day that he thought was the best day of his life.
Aww.
Like, we started at 10 a.m. and I think we ended at 10 p.m. And it was just like,
wow.
Wherever we wanted to go. And we didn't go that, like I said, we maybe stayed within a 10 or 20, maybe 30 radius, but it was pretty fun.
It's awesome.
And it wasn't just about shopping though, if you know what I mean. Like, we went and we had other things, and then you end up finding out that there's these cute little shops, places that you didn't think of or know, or it's very interesting. So get outside your normal routines.
Then that's bold. I think that's really the definition of bold. It just fell out of your mouth. It did. That's really where it's at, is it's something that you're not used to doing. And then that seems bold to people. You know, when you make a bucket list, do you actually think like, how am I going to do this? Not really. You just put it down. You stay focused on the what, and the how makes itself known.
Yeah.
I mean, it does. The analogy is that life is like a restaurant, you know, and you just have to know what you want so you can order it. Mm-hmm. Everything that's on the menu is available. And not once has the waiter asked you, ma'am, do you know how to make that chicken cacciatore? No, you don't know how? Nobody asks you how. They're just like, okay, I got it. And then the universal kitchen rearranges itself for your order and it comes to your table. And life can be like that. It's like a restaurant, you know, the menu, ordering the life you want. Same theory. We don't call the waiter back to say, is it working? How are they going to do this for me? You know, it's just the fact that it's, you know, it's already done. It's just been waiting for your order kind of thing.
Yeah, I love that.
I guess it's an easy relatable to, you know, we all go to a restaurant, right? Yeah.
And I like somebody else cooking for me.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's not my thing anymore. I mean, you know, I went to school for it, but that's because my dad forced me to. It's like, we'll finish. Yeah. But hey, it's a skill. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. I make really good ramen now. That's about it. I'm just like, I'm done with that. So as far as your young mom, your young looking mom.
I am young looking, but I'm in my 40s.
Yeah. extremely young looking. And there are entrepreneurs out there who might be looking to, how do you do it? Are there any pieces of advice that you might have for someone maybe wanting to start another round of business or get out of where they're at, or any pieces like that that you might want to share, Judy?
I think the number one thing to share is, you know, find, it becomes that who you surround yourself by, you are more like them. And I know that has been batted around for so long, but what I've learned is that those five people can be podcasts too. They can be,
yes,
online, they can be YouTubers, they can be anyone who shows up and has a voice on the internet and is available voice, or a book, or author. But when you surround yourself by their messaging, they can be your top five kind of people. Because a lot of us don't necessarily, I didn't necessarily have friends day to day that were running their own businesses at that time. And since then, I've Googled and searched and found more communities. Like I was saying, the RebelCon community here in Richmond has recently formed. And I'm a founding member of that program because I saw the value in trying to surround myself by more women entrepreneurs. So I guess I'm coming from a place, there isn't anything wrong with men or women, and I love all the voices, but I couldn't see myself running a business until I actually started. Okay, let me take that back. I couldn't see all the ways that I could successfully run a business as a single mom until I was consuming a few more voices that were a little closer and similar to me. Because I couldn't see myself taking some of the advice that was being given by some really big names, but they also have a team and they're almost too far ahead for me to relate to all of their tips or advice, because it didn't feel like they were sharing it anymore from the trenches of doing it as just starting out, maybe not having the budget for a 10-person team. You right. See what I mean? Like,
yes.
And that's why I think people underestimate all these big names. We need all the other people. We need the people who aren't. We need people who like are sharing and coaching and teaching from this line right here. Because there's how many millions of people who aren't even here at this line, let alone all the way over freaking here, where somebody really big like Marie Forleo is, for example, and she's all the way over here with a huge team and a huge affiliate network, and she's been doing this for tons and tons of years. That's a different story. So.
And it's also not as relatable. Even though everybody started with one, everybody, nobody was born with a team. Yeah. It may not be everybody's vision.
And I think what's helpful is there's some people I follow, and to find out a little bit more behind the scenes because you listen to their podcast. And honestly, I bet, I'll just say, most people are teaching and coaching and training and putting all their content out there. But it goes back to your restaurant analogy, that when that person can boil it down into this amazing recipe and they can deliver it and they can make it an amazing experience, nobody can replicate that. You're a restaurant owner of one.
Yes.
And if you can train your employees and start building a community, you can franchise and, you know, become a chain, I guess. But I'm just thinking from a perspective of somebody like Marie Forleo getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But at the end of the day, you still have to figure out how to make that the first amazing restaurant. So yes. Back to your restaurant analogy.
Yeah, it's true. And what do you want to have on the menu?
Yes.
What are the offerings? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So going back to the five people thing, I think that's really brilliant that you brought that up. So I was hanging around with some people like the Chicken Soup for the Soul guys back in the day when it was just taking off, and Mark was a good friend, Mark Hansen, and he used to say it kind of regularly, and he's like, people don't really believe it that this can happen, and what is it, Mark? And he says, I call on the spirits of the best authors that have ever been in the world. I call on them, and those are the people I'm with. And he didn't mean people, and he didn't say it exactly like that. But you get what I'm saying, right? Mm-hmm. You can access it. The knowledge is there. And to take advantage of it now with this world of, you know, virtual, real life authorities can be sought out, you know. Mm-hmm. but it is a matter of whose voices are you taking in, mm-hmm. And who's, you know, I have this thing I want to teach called dud, stud, friend, or foe. Who gets to stay? Who ought to go? And because, you know, some of those voices are not ones that you want to keep hearing, you know, mm-hmm. But it becomes normal. And so an adjustment of what used to be and what is wanted, I can't even find the words for it. It's a leap over something. It's a going around the corner. It's something so unfamiliar. So, how do you instill trust in someone that's going to work out? You know, how do you do that? How do you do that? You model it, you be it.
Mm-hmm. You know, you I think are. You nailed it.
Oh, good. I just worked out my own problem. Thank you. So clearly. I would love to keep you on, and I won't.
I know. I would love to go forever, but I do have other things.
No, thank you so much for being on Bold Movers and Shakers. This has been the most unusual path of an interview so far, mm-hmm. and I've enjoyed every minute of it with you. And I know that they will too. I'm probably going to split it into two and just be like, "Here's this, and then there's that." And thank you for being vulnerable and open and always so, you know, present. Mm-hmm. Really, really appreciate your time. And is there any final thought that you would like to direct business to or place that?
I think the biggest thing I always have to tell people is how to spell my name. It's really not, it has different versions. It's J-U-D-I-F-O-X. That's all. That's literally, like, if you go to my website, it's J-U-D-I-F-O-X. And mainly it's the I part, because when you go to J-U-D-Y, I guess I'm sending traffic her way. I think she's an artist. She probably does amazing work, but she's getting extra traffic.
Yeah, and the Alexis and Alexis Ray out there is shaving mm-hmm. her head on YouTube. So, yeah, I get it.
Yeah. So, yes. JUDIFOX.com is the best place to start, because then you can go wherever you like to live online. I've got all my social channels at the top, and you can find out all the things the Fox is up to.
Perfect, because she's up to a lot of good things, guys. Pretty Fox rocks.
Thank you.
Yeah. So thank you guys for tuning in to Bold Movers and Shakers, the extended play. This one is the long play, and it has been an absolute joy and a pleasure to meet someone so lit up and lively and helping people with their heart on their sleeve. And that to me is just boldness in motion.
Thank
live
you.
Boldly, live out loud, and we'll see you back again. Subscribe, rate, review. Bye.